Governor J.B. Pritzker has begun the next chapter in his public campaign to kill Illinois' flat rate income tax and replace it with a progressive or graduated income tax. Last week, he released the proposed tax rates ranging from 4.75 to 7.95%. He claims it would raise $3.4 billion extra a year, while the vast majority of taxpayers would pay less in taxes, some only a little less, though. Republican State Senator Jason Berrickman of Bloomington tells Ryan Denham he's still digesting the proposal, but already has some concerns.
This proposal, pitched as a tax cut to 97% of Illinoisans, I think, you know, deserves a much harder look. The question becomes, are there protections there to protect the middle class from future tax increases? You know, we've come through some record historic tax increases just in the last 2 years, right? 2 years ago, fairly partisan vote, some Republicans joined, right? The effort that raised taxes by $5 billion. And if you listen to the message back then, people said, well, we've got to do this. We need the revenue. This will let us pay our bills. This will let us solve our problems, and then we'll move on. And many of us who stood in opposition to that said, look, we have got to reform the way in which we spend our money. We've got to control our spending. And that was the reason for our opposition then. Well, fast forward to today, no reforms enacted, no controls on spending. In fact, the governor's budget proposal this year proposes to increase spending by over $1 billion. He includes in that a number of taxes, new fees that, you know, generate over $1 billion. And then he comes forward yesterday and says, well, now I need almost $3.5 billion more. And at some point, you have to acknowledge that this cannot be addressed through tax increases alone. There have to be efforts to control our spending and ultimately reform the way in which our government spends our limited tax dollars. So it's concerning to me that the Pritzker agenda seems solely focused on how do we generate more revenue. In doing that, he proposes to change the Constitution in a way that removes the protections the middle class have today from future tax increases. And so we're going to wade through this, right? This is all part of the budget process and proposal. But, you know, I know I'm not alone in coming out of the gate, you know, right away in seeing some areas that look incredibly concerning to me.
Well, how do you do that? How do you codify a protection for middle class as a graduated income tax goes into effect?
Well, you know, a couple of things. So the governor says, let's change the Constitution, right, and allow for graduated rates. So depending on how much money you make, you pay different rates. And he says, day one, don't worry about it, everyone. No one, you know, we're going to get $3.5 billion of money, but none of you are really going to pay anything more. I think the public is very cynical to that notion, and they know that while this may be where the rates start today, what's to stop those in charge next year when they look at the budget that, look, next year the spending side's going to go up. We presume it's going to go up. And those in charge are going to say, how do we solve next year's problem? And they say, well, let's just tinker with the rates. Well, tinkering with the rates means whatever they are today, more people are going to pay taxes next year as a result of that tinkering. And the way you protect that, there's a number of ways to protect that. First of all, I've been very clear for years about our need to control our property taxes. The governor says, I want property tax relief, but he really didn't give much property tax relief in what he proposed. If you amend the Constitution to allow for graduated rates, some states allow for protections like providing that any tax increase requires a supermajority vote. And they embed that idea right in their Constitution. The governor didn't propose anything like that. He says, let's amend the Constitution, allow for graduated rates, but no protections in the future that we're not just going to willy-nilly move those rates and those tax brackets down and, again, aggravate the middle class, who I think believes we've got to reform our government and control our spending.
In terms of middle class protections on this, they don't have a lot of protection right now. I mean, couldn't the General Assembly just tomorrow go and do 5.5 5% income tax or 6.5%? I mean, there's no protections right now. So
right, but this is the shift is that the governor is saying, I'm going to change the structure, so I'm only going to tax the rich so you don't have to worry about it. Well, what he defines as rich today may be fundamentally different than how it's defined tomorrow. And while the Constitution today says you got to treat everybody equally, he says you don't, but he doesn't protect those categories in what he proposes as a change to the Constitution. So if you look across the country, many states put in their Constitution protections so that a tax increase can only be advanced with supermajority votes. That, I believe, is a mechanism used to protect the middle class from every year the majority looking at the brackets and the rates and saying, well, let's just move them a bit. The protection is it would require supermajority vote to make those, even if small, adjustments that result in a tax increase.
And if a mechanism like that is in place, does the governor get a vote from a guy like you?
Well, this is where I'd say there needs to be protections in place. My issues are those protections on the middle class. I think we've got to do more on our property taxes. You know, to me, those are two very important areas. The governor proposed a whole bunch of tax increases in his budget proposal, whether it be raising existing taxes and fees or legalizing new products that are new things that may be taxed, like cannabis. Some things that I'm open to, but I think by and large, we've got to find some mechanisms to put those protections in place.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Senator Berrickman, you've teamed up with Democratic State Senator Andy Menar to introduce a bill that would make it easier for new political parties and independent candidates to get on the ballot. So how would this work exactly?
Well, you got to go backwards and remember that the playing field is very uneven today. The playing field protects the established political parties, Republicans and Democrats, and says that there's a set of rules in place for those two political parties that are favorable to them, and there's a different set of rules that apply to new political parties, third parties, whether it be Libertarian, Green, you name it. It's a different set of rules, and that different set of rules are very difficult for those other political parties and candidates to adhere to. So what we propose is to level the playing field and to say what's good for Republicans and Democrats is good for other political parties. This is an effort that, look, the political leaders of the established parties, Republicans and Democrats, they're not going to like this. They wrote the rules. They created this two-class system where if you're not one of them, you have to apply to a different set of rules. I think that's very unfair. I think that more people running for office is good. I recognize that sometimes more people running for office could be bad for Republicans. I think that was, you know, if you looked at Rahner's campaign last year, he worked very hard to make sure third-party candidate Sam McCann did not have ballot access, right? Or at least did not become a challenger to him. Sam McCann would say, well, the rules were really skewed against me. The whole system was skewed against me, including the rules of how I qualify as a candidate. So I propose to change that. And in doing so, again, I recognize that more candidates for public office is good. Competition is good. The result of competitive elections is the public is better served. And this bill, again, attempts to level the playing field. It's bipartisan. I'm working with Senator Menar on it. Not the first time he and I have worked together.
Education being some other examples.
Yeah. So I think this is a good government initiative. It's something that's good for the public. And given the bipartisan support, look, I think it's an uphill battle, right? Because when the political leaders are against you, it's tough.
Yeah. How do you get buy-in from legislative leaders on something like this? So what is going to be your approach with Senator Menar?
Well, I think we have to appeal to the common sense of most voters who look at this and say, hey, this just makes sense. A lot of voters are Republicans or Democrats. They may view themselves in those buckets, but they'd still look at this and say, hey, regardless of my own political persuasion, the same as Berrickman saying here, this just looks to be unfair and we ought to fix it. and then particular to those who identify with, you know, third parties, again, Greens and independents and libertarians, I think they look at this as meaningful. And I hope, and in fact, I've talked to some of our, you know, third party candidates and activists locally.
The McLean County Libertarian Party actually issued a statement supporting your work on this bill, and not easy to get praise from the Libertarian Party as a major party candidate here.
But glad to have it, yeah. Right? And I've worked with the Libertarian Party before on other initiatives, and I think this is one where they're right, and I'm glad to run, you know, to try to move this bill forward.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham here with State Senator Jason Barrickman. It's been a month or so since you were in studio here, and things are moving in Springfield in a lot of different ways. So what is the latest on the potential legalization of recreational marijuana? Have bills been introduced? Is the shape of that firming up at all?
Yes and no. So the only bill that was introduced was last year's, which I think is old news at this point. There has clearly been an effort to move from last year's bill to something that addresses the many concerns that, including from me, that existed with last year's legislation. There's certainly been progress on that, but I think there's some obstacles in the immediate sense. A couple things that come. You know, first of all, there's no bill today yet, and 30 days ago, I probably would have said I anticipate a bill soon. We still don't have one. The sponsors have not introduced one. I think that the reason that you haven't seen legislation is, first of all, you've got a new governor who campaigned on this issue. There's been some reports of his difficulty in staffing up. Those are important things in the legislative process, right? A governor comes in and says, "Well, I want to legalize cannabis." He's got to hire policy staff who can work through the details of what exactly it is that he supports. The details, I believe, on this one are incredibly important. And the governor has, because he's had some challenges staffing up, I think there's been a bit of a vacuum out of his office about what exactly he wants to support. And so the bill sponsors, both Democrats, I think have paused in introducing legislation because they don't want to get ahead of what it is the governor wants. And I understand that, right? He's a Democrat. They're Democrat sponsors. That's the way it works. But it has caused some delay in them putting the legislation forward. The other issue is this. Within the Democratic side of the aisle is what's called a black caucus. It is legislators who are African Americans who group together on issues where they think their voice is stronger. How they would pitch this, but you know, from my perception, they think their voice is stronger if they work together as a group to address issues that may be unique to their districts and communities. And on this issue, on legalizing cannabis, the Black Caucus, I think, is very well organized. They have some very specific policy issues that they want addressed out of this. You know, a lot of their communities come at legalizing cannabis from a social justice perspective, something that I think is important to all of us here, but it's really important to them. And they look at some of their communities as having been really torn apart by the prohibition of cannabis. It's put a lot of their youth in jail and prisons over the years. And so they're looking at this legalization effort as an opportunity to make some improvements there. How that's done becomes, you know, tricky, if not controversial. And so I think that, you know, my understanding is they're working together to try to come forward with their ideas that can be presented to the bill sponsor, how those ideas mesh with the governor and mesh with some of us on the Republican side of the aisle who, you know, again, have expressed an openness here. How those all mesh together really will dictate, whether and how this thing, this bill comes together and is ultimately voted on.
That's State Senator Jason Barrickman, a Republican from Bloomington. He joins us nearly every month on Sound Ideas.